Blog Talk Radio.
Are you looking for an all-natural solution to skincare? Try Simplicita all-natural skincare products. Coconut oil locks in moisture with nature's finest organic solution. Rich with vitamin E and rejuvenating proteins, it can help with enhancing skin nourishment for wrinkles, skin damage, tissue repair, and more. Simplicita skincare line includes Simplicita coconut oil, Simplicita bath salts, and Simplicita bath gel. Get healthier looking skin today. Order all three today for $40 at www.simplicita.com. And I know for a fact that it helps with diabetic edema. My husband has edema on both of his legs. He is insulin dependent, and he also has very dry skin on his feet and toes, and it has made a world of difference. You definitely want to go to www.simplicita.com and order her products today. They do not have any unnatural ingredients or any preservatives. It is all simply coconut oil with maybe a little jasmine. Order it today. Are you looking for a website creator that will make your website stand out above the herd? Are you looking for someone that knows your needs and can create a website that is not only eye-catching, but one that will stay with the customer as they scroll through the net? If so, contact Wellhaven & Associates. Lourdes Wellhaven has the magic touch when it comes to websites. You give her an idea and let her run with it, and she will create something beautiful. If you don't believe me, check out authoryvonmason.com and see what she has done for me. And here's the great thing. If you contact her and give her my name, she'll give you $100 off. So don't wait. Don't delay. Call today or go online and look up Wellhaven & Associates and send her an email and tell her what you need. She will get back with you promptly.
The year, 1888. The place, London's East End. Dead and mutilated bodies are popping up all over, from Stamford to Whitechapel. Jack the Ripper is leaving his mark, and the city's on edge. Yvonne Mason is back with a tale of murder and millinery. The Rhodes Hat Factory is booming while the body count rises. Why now? How are these hats connected? Has the Hatter gone mad? Mad Hatter, Yvonne Mason. Available now on Amazon.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If it's Friday night, it's Off the Chain. This is your host, Yvonne Mason, and tonight we have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful children's author. Yes, we're taking a bit of a different road tonight. It is our debut children's author. Her name is Wanda Lussman, and I have waited all week long to interview this wonderful, wonderful woman. She published her first children's book, The Lilac Princess, in 2014. Then came her wonderful tale of Tad, A Turtle's Magical Adventure, published in March of this year. And then in August of this year, she debuted Little Birdie Grows Up, which is her very first picture book. Now, a little background on Wanda. She has her Master of Arts in both mental health counseling and guidance counseling from Rollins College, which is in beautiful Winter Park, Florida. She's worked at a local community mental health center for 10 years, and then she transferred to the public school system as a guidance counselor. She worked at a high school for the past 18 years, and she's also been an adjunct professor at the local community college and worked with teens who had lost a loved one through hospice. She has always loved reading and writing and wrote many books and poems as a child growing up in Missouri. She presently resides in Brevard County, Florida, with her husband of 21 years and two dogs, and her daughter, who is away at college. And like Little Birdie, her daughter has flown the nest. Wanda, thank you so, so much for being here tonight. I am just so grateful that you are sparing an hour to sit and chat with me about these beautiful, beautiful books that I've been looking at.
Oh, thank you so much, Yvonne, for having me here tonight. I'm so grateful myself for you to have me on your show, and I'm just so happy to be here. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. I was reading through your bio, and you started writing poems and stories as a child. And like I said during the before the show, I like for my audience to know my guests before we get into the product, because it makes them want the product more. So how did you get from a young child in Missouri writing poems and small stories to getting a Master of Arts in Mental Health Counselor and Guidance Counselor? How did you take that journey?
Well, it's an interesting question. When I was really young, I was super shy. And so writing was the way I expressed myself. And I mean, when I say super shy, I was like painfully shy. I would hide behind my mother's dress, you know, when we were out in public, and didn't want her friends to like meet me, you know. And so writing was just a great way for me to express myself and my thoughts and all of that. And I just enjoyed writing stories and making up different, you know, stories about animals and things that were, you know, in my life at the time. Then as I grew, you know, along about high school, I really enjoyed talking to my friends. You know, they would confide in me about their problems. And I had an adult actually tell me she felt like I should major in psychology. And I, you know, thought about that. And then when I went to college, I took my first psychology class and fell in love with the class. And I thought, yeah, this sounds pretty good. And so, you know, I did major in psychology. I did also take 16 credits of literature, so I was still on the writing, you know, forefront, but I just kind of felt like I wasn't going to be able to make a living at that time starting out in writing. So I pursued psychology, and then I moved to Florida and, you know, started working at the local community mental health center. And I always knew that to really do what I wanted to do, I was going to need more education. And so somebody had told me about the Rollins College Masters of Arts program. And so I applied to that and got in and went through that program there.
Well, in your travels, you started teaching at the, well, actually worked in the local community health center, and then you mm-hmm. went into the public school system as a guidance counselor. How mm-hmm. different was that from going into the public sector as a mental health counselor than as a guidance counselor to children in high school?
Mm-hmm. Well, and so that was interesting, too. I worked for about 10 years at the Community Mental Health Center, and I held several different positions there, and I loved my job. I felt like that was my calling in life. I was very happy. I enjoyed helping people, but after I had my daughter, I really didn't want to not be available to her during her summers when she was off from school. And in my degree, when I was pursuing a mental health degree, other teachers were pursuing a guidance degree. We took the exact same classes, except for the mental health degree had a few more classes to take. So I decided to go back and finish up the guidance degree so that I could transfer to a school system. And I really didn't know what to expect, you know, how different it was going to be. And when I first got my first job in the school system, I really missed counseling. You know, I was just like, oh, I'm so sad that I don't get to do counseling as much. You know, in guidance, you just don't get to do much. There's a lot more paperwork, and, you know, you're all about helping them move along in their grade levels. Well, after a few years, and I got more adjusted to the education system, and then I moved up to a high school, I started at a middle school, I really just fell in love with helping the kids graduate high school and move on to college or, you know, their career, military, whatever their choice was. And it just became even more fulfilling than my previous job, which I wouldn't have ever thought that would happen. And I just love the energy of kids, and I love talking to them about what they want to be when they grow up. And, you know, really, you do some counseling because there are kids that are hurting. And so I still get to do a little bit of counseling. So my background comes in very handy with that.
Then you went to the college level. What mm-hmm. made you go from the high school into the college level?
Well, that actually happened while I was still at the Community Mental Health Center. One of my coworkers worked there, and they had an opening. And so I went ahead and taught just part-time as an adjunct professor. I still was working at the Mental Health Center full-time. And I taught the general psychology class. And it was right about the time that they were starting to do online classes. So they asked me to develop the online general psych class, which I did. And after that was up and running, I asked if I could develop the developmental psychology class, and they let me do that. So that was really fun to be on the ground floor of those things. And I enjoyed working there. But again, after I had my daughter, it was like I just didn't have enough hours in the day. You know, I couldn't be taking my evenings away from her. So I stopped that that job.
I understand that because those babies do require a lot of care.
Yes,
in
they
order
do.
In order for them to grow and be well-rounded. Mm-hmm. What I found interesting also is you worked with teens who had lost a loved one through hospice, and the reason that drew me is, I don't know how long you've followed me, but last year I lost my 13-year-old granddaughter to an asthma attack, and she literally died in her sister's arms.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
And her sister was 16 at the time. And in
fact,
the whole family was there. She died in front of her younger brother. Her father did CPR to try to bring her back. Her mother was there. Her cousin was there. So when I saw that, I thought, what a beautiful thing, because generally adults don't think that children hurt when they lose someone, but they do. They grieve.
Mm-hmm.
They have to go through that grieving process just like adults do, no matter how big or how small or whatever age. They have suffered a loss.
Right. That is so true. Yeah, how that happened is after I stopped working at the Community Mental Health Center, one of my friends, I mean, not the community college, one of my friends at the Community Mental Health Center had started working at the hospice center and needed a group leader and asked if I would do that. And that was only one night a week every other week. So I thought I could fit that in around my daughter. And I had not ever really done grief counseling. You kind of would think at a mental health center you would, but it was really more severe mental illnesses and things like that as opposed to death and grief. And so I had a lot to learn. And, you know, I worked with the teens who, you know, I'm a little bit more comfortable with, but the person who ran the younger kids group sometimes would not be able to be there. And so I was asked to fill in. And I'm telling you, when I would sit in on those groups and those little babies, you know, you'd pass around the talking stick so that they would know it was their turn to talk. And, you know, the little two-year-old that would hold their talking stick and say, you know, I'm so-and-so and my mommy died, it would just break my heart, you know. And, you know, they would be resilient. It was really amazing to me to watch, you know, those children suffer. You know, they do suffer grief. They absolutely feel loss and grief, and not just at the time that that person has left them, but especially if it's a mom or a dad or a sibling or a grandparent, every stage that they go through, they re-grieve that loss in a different way. Because when you think about it, like, you know, let's say it was a sibling, and you go, oh, well, they would have been in middle school now, and now I'm in middle school, and I can't ask them what they liked about middle school or what they didn't, you know, and they re-grieve that loss. Or if it was a parent, that their parent isn't there when they, you know, go to prom or, you know, graduation and things like that. And so each stage for those children is a new grief process. And a lot of times you're right. Adults don't think that children grieve. Or if they do think they grieve, they're not sure how to help them process it, because children don't use the same language we do.
And sometimes do you agree that children act out in with behavior issues or withdrawing or anger issues because they can't express what their that sense of loss? And like you say, everything they do, every milestone is a first. It's the first Christmas without that person. It's the first birthday without that person. It's the first whatever without that person. They don't know how to, some of them don't know how to, even the teenagers don't know how to process that brand new pain that they're going through.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, they definitely tend to act out more, and that doesn't always mean they act out badly, but they act out their feelings. And sometimes it is anger, sometimes it is withdrawal, sometimes it's overly silly, or they laugh at everything, even when it's a serious topic, or, you know, all kinds of things that we just wouldn't think. You know, you think, oh, they should just be sad, but that's not what grief looks like, you know. And so, yeah, to give them a safe place where they can talk about how they feel and what they're thinking, and especially with other kids who have lost a loved one, really helps them not feel like they are weird or abnormal. Because sometimes in regular school, people will say, oh, yeah, my mom is taking me to the mall, and they'll forget that that person doesn't have a mom. Or they'll say, oh, my mom is taking me to the mall, and then realize it and go, oh, I'm sorry. And then that makes that person feel like they're abnormal. And so they need a safe place that they can talk about it and process it.
And while we're sitting here having this conversation, I just had an epiphany, and I'm going to bring it up now before I lose the thought process. I would love, if you're willing, to do a show on grief, and we all know grief has no timetable.
And right.
If you're willing to do that, I would love to bring you back, and let's just do a show on grief and process and the different stages and the fact that it has no time. And it's okay to have all of these feelings.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would be honored to come back and do a grief show with you. I would love to do that, because to get more information about that out to people, the better. You know, absolutely. I would love to do that. Thank you.
And I am also, writing. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to say I'm so sorry about the loss of your granddaughter, or was it a niece?
It was my granddaughter, yes.
Granddaughter. She am so sorry. That is just awful that a 13-year-old would pass, you know.
Well, it was an asthma attack, and what is so sad is 650,000 children under the age of 15 die every year from asthma.
Wow.
Nobody knew it.
No, because you think, oh, they're treated, they're fine. Yeah, you don't know that happens.
And so when I bring you back, what I would like, when I bring you back, I'm going to make sure my daughter and my oldest granddaughter listen to the show, because that same granddaughter, that oldest granddaughter, is now a soldier. She belongs to Uncle Sam. She goes to boot camp in the summer and then finishes her senior year, and then she ships out. But I think the show would be good for her. And ladies and gentlemen, it will be good for any of you that are suffering grief, have suffered. It doesn't matter if it's 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. The grief is still there.
Right, absolutely.
Excellent. See how well this works? Just me and you and 5,000 of our closest friends. I love it.
So that's going to
segue me into a statement that I read. And I'm going to quote you.
Mm-hmm.
And the quote is, "I want to inspire your children to be the best people they can be." Now, for
mm-hmm.
people that have been living under a rock for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
explain that statement so that our listeners will understand what you're trying to say before we delve into these beautiful books.
Sure. You know, when I think about what I want to say in a book, I definitely want to entertain kids. I want them to enjoy the reading of the book. But even more than that, I just want to pass on a message to them that they can be anything they want to be, and for them to have a choice and to live up to their dream and be the best person that they can be. And when you do that, when you live up to your dream and your passion, you enhance this whole world that we live in. You know, you light a candle, as they say, and then that candle spreads because you're doing, you know, you're providing your gift to the world, you know.
So let's say little Johnny, and I don't know if you've seen the videos or not, where the little twins go out and meet the sanitation workers and take them drinks, and the sanitation worker is their best friend. So maybe
mm-hmm.
these twins want to grow up and be sanitation workers, which is a necessary job. Two,
mm-hmm.
it is a very legal and important job. So if the twins want to do that, do you agree that that dream should always be in front of them?
Absolutely. Yeah, if that's what they want to do, absolutely. I believe in helping the children find what their passion is, as opposed to maybe imposing what we think it should be on them and then helping them reach that goal. That's absolutely, you know, a passion of mine.
So would it be fair to say, Wanda, that parents, and some parents are sadly prone to do this, that we should never live vicariously through our children? In other words, if a dream we had did not come to fruition, but we
mm-hmm.
still want to see that dream happen, we should not force that child. If the child wants to do it, fine, encourage them. But if that child wants
mm-hmm.
to do something else, we should not force that child to be a mirror image of ourselves. Am I correct in that statement?
You are very correct, Yvonne. And unfortunately, I think parents do this and not even realize it. It's not even like it's a conscious thing. They're going, oh, I didn't get this, and they need to do that. I think they just see themselves and their child, and they just think, oh, you should do this because I didn't get to do that, you know. And instead of really helping that child explore what they're good at and what they like, and then, you know, then letting them figure out their dream for themselves. And it's hard, it's difficult to do, to kind of be that person that just exposes them to different things and lets them figure it out, as opposed to really directing that.
What if little Johnny watches his favorite band on television? Say he's
mm-hmm.
5 years old, and little Johnny says, "Mama, I want to be just like Billy Joel." It's a name that
mm-hmm.
comes to mind, one of my favorite artists. I want to be just like Billy Joel.
Mm-hmm.
And his mama says, "That's nice, son. Someday we'll talk about it." So 3 years
mm-hmm.
later, little Johnny's 8 years old, and he sees Billy Joel again, and he says, "Mama, I want to be just like Billy Joel." And his mama says, "That's nice, son. Someday we'll talk about it." Well, 3 years have already gone by where she could have gotten little Johnny a not an expensive piano, but a piano,
mm-hmm.
gotten
mm-hmm.
him piano lessons, gotten him singing lessons to see if that is indeed what he wanted to do.
Right.
Would it be fair to say that that parent has already retarded the dream growth of that child?
Well, that might be too harsh of a statement because, you know, 8, you still have some time to, you know, get it all figured out and stuff. But, I mean, I do think if Johnny has an idea at 5 that he wants to do something, and it's within your means to help them have some experience in that. I know when my daughter was young, she said she wanted to grow up and be a singer, which is funny you bring that up. And so I put her in the choir at church, and she sang in the choir and really, really enjoyed that. But at some point around high school, she decided that was not for her, you know, and that was fine. Okay, so you, that's not what you want to do. But, you know, definitely.
But she still had the opportunity to try it.
Yes, and I think that's important to give them, to expose them to that and let them see if that's what they want. And that's great. If they go on further and they love it, that's fabulous. If they change their mind, that's okay too. And so that's a piece to be open to. So, yes, I would say for this parent, it's not a great idea to delay a child when they're saying something like that. But, you know, at 8, if you finally, you know, kind of wake up and go, oh, I probably should expose my child to some singing lessons or music lessons or something, you know, you could still get involved at that point and open the doors for them.
But to keep putting it off and
yeah.
Poo-pooing yes, this child's see. Dream, it retards yes. that child's creative ability, and of course, that's my humble mm-hmm. opinion. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, it could stifle that child of ever reaching for any dream.
It could, absolutely. And, you know, on a side note, when I was a child and I showed my mom the first book I wrote, she said, oh, that's nice, dear, and patted me on the head and sent me away. And I really wanted more of a reaction from her. And I think that's a piece of why I thought it couldn't be a career option. And I didn't, I don't know, feel supported, I guess. So, you know, I'm kind of like that child that you're talking about. And I pursued other things. And really, in my life, I feel like it's okay. You know, the path I went down has been very fulfilling, and I'm happy and all of that. But now that I'm finally realizing my lifelong dream, I am more fulfilled and more happy than I've ever been. I feel like I've finally found my real skin, so to speak. You know, I'm finally living in my real me. It's kind of an interest. I don't know how to describe it. So, yes, I think it's very important to not squash dreams. But often I think people don't even realize they're squashing. I mean, when I showed my mom my book, I'm sure she didn't think, oh, Wanda wants to be a writer, I should encourage her. She just thought, oh, that's cute, you know. And so, I mean, I hate for parents to feel too guilty. Guilt comes so much with parenting anyway, you know, because things can happen like that. And so, I think
it's
to try to be sensitive.
And I agree with you, because I, too, was in that same situation where for years I didn't write, because every time I showed someone what I had written, I got that same reaction.
Yeah.
That's not
yeah.
Okay, moving on here. So for years I felt like there was something missing in my life, and I did other things, and I was very successful at them. But
uh-huh.
I understand when you say I finally found my skin when uh-huh. you started writing and publishing, because it's like, wow,
mm-hmm.
this is what's been missing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I am very, very familiar with that feeling. And I
mm-hmm.
like that you say that your books bring your statement of I want to inspire your children to be the best people they can be, and your books mm-hmm. bring that statement to a reality.
Mm-hmm.
What made you take that genre of book, of writing for children and inspiring children? Was it because you worked with children for so many years, or what brought you to that decision?
Well, that is such an interesting question, because one time someone asked me, why did I choose, you know, writing for children? And I really have to say, I feel like the genre chose me because I knew I always wanted to publish a book, but I couldn't figure out what kind of book I wanted to publish. And when I was in mental health, I kept thinking I would do some sort of self-help book or something, and just nothing was really gelling. And so it just happened. One morning I woke up and I had this whole story, and I took a pad of paper and started writing and just didn't stop until the whole story had come out, you know. And it was The Lilac Princess. And I just felt like this story chose me, you know, and it was just something I had to tell. And I think a little bit of it is, yes, definitely having worked with children. And also, I think the little child in me, you know, wanted maybe to have had a similar kind of book that would have helped me, you know. So I think it's kind of twofold there.
Well, since you brought up The Lilac Princess, what age group do you write for? And what age group is The Lilac Princess suited for?
So typically my books are for between ages 7 to 11, targeting that third, fourth grade age student and or child. And Lilac Princess is for that age. And so is A Turtle's Magical Adventure. Of course, the other picture book is for younger. But really that age group around third, fourth grade, maybe their first chapter book, that kind of reader.
All right, let's talk about The Lilac Princess, because the synopsis of it is beautiful. And
thank
I can
you.
See this little princess on her journey. I can see her in my mind's eye. First of all, why do you call her the Lilac Princess?
Well, in the story, she lives inside of a castle, and there's wars going on in the countryside. And so since her parents are elderly, she's the one that's going to have to take over for them. So they're very protective. And they tell her she can't go outside the castle. But when she looks outside her window, she sees all these beautiful lilacs growing in the meadow, and she wants to go visit these beautiful purple patches of flowers. And so as it goes, there's a village boy who hands her a lilac, and she gets to smell it, and she just thinks it's the most heavenly scent she's ever smelled. And so then she hatches a plan for how she's going to get outside the castle and go visit these lilacs. And so the boy kind of dubs her the Lilac Princess because of her love for that flower.
And she also has a dragon that is in this story. Is he a evil dragon, or does she win him over?
So he is an evil dragon. He winds up finding her in the lilac patch outside the castle and befriends her. And, you know, she takes a ride on his back and gets to go see the whole countryside and her, you know, castle from the air. And, you know, she's just really happy. And then he steals her away and shows his evil side.
And at the end of your synopsis, you say, the Lilac Princess will capture your imagination and your heart as it joins adventure with life's lessons for the young and old about the merits of responsibility, forgiveness, and standing up for what you believe. To me, that last sentence captures this whole book, because it goes back to your statement of, I want to inspire your children to be the best people they can be.
Absolutely.
And anyone that gets this book for their child, be it boy or girl, because I think boys could benefit from reading this book, because there are life lessons in it.
Yeah.
First
Absolutely.
Of all, She has elderly parents, which if we all live long enough, and they live long enough, I have an elderly parent. My father died last year right after the grandbaby did. But I have an elderly parent that lives in Georgia. I live in Florida. So I have that sense of responsibility of taking care of her the best that I can. I've also had to do a lot of forgiveness in my lifetime. But I've also had to learn how to stand up for what I believe. And young people sometimes don't know how to stand up for what they believe in on a positive side, because they don't know how to get that across. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, I think that's very true.
How does your princess stand up for what she believes?
Well, you know, of course, the dragon is evil, and when he gets her to his lair, he tells her that she must, you know, give her allegiance to him. And then, you know, if she does that, he will make her powerful. And, of course, she realizes he's evil, and that's not what she doesn't want to give her allegiance to him. But he is threatening her, you know, with her life. And so she's got to make a very difficult judgment. You know, is she going to just cave to save her life, or is she going to say no? You know, do with me what you will, but this, I'm not going to give you my allegiance. And so it's a very tough judgment call.
And in real life, especially this 11 through 13, 14, 15, children have to battle this all the time with their peers and with things that are going on in their life. And a child may have a very strong belief about something, but then the bully factor comes in, and like you say, they have to make a decision. And I don't think sometimes they know how to make that decision without giving up something.
I agree. I think it's difficult for anybody, regardless of your age, to, in the face of potential death or being bullied or losing your job or, you know, whatever thing that's valuable to you, you know, to potentially have that lost because of, you know, taking a stand. That's very difficult for anybody to do. And so, yes, a lot of times our youth don't have those skills to, you know, figure that out, or even, you know, feel like they have the support from wherever, you know, to do that, to stand up and say, no, not going to do it.
This book, yes, I'll be getting this book for the great-granddaughter and the great-grandson. Then you have this other one, which I read it and I'm going, oh my, I wish I'd had this book when I was little. A Turtle's Magic Adventure. Tell our listeners about this beautiful, beautiful story.
Well, so Tad is a little turtle who, he's a swimming turtle, and so he loves to swim, and he's very happy and comfortable in the water. But when he gets on land, he's really slow, and it takes him forever to get to school, and he's always being punished by his teacher for being late, and the other kids make fun of him, other animal kids make fun of him, and so he decides he wants to be rid of his shell because it just makes him too slow. And if he didn't have his shell, he'd be like the snake, who is super fast. And so he goes along, and he meets some other characters who are slow, and he asks them, do they mind being slow, and, you know, what do they do? And each one gives a different way that they've sort of coped with being slow. And, you know, he thinks about all those things, but still, you know, he wants to be fast. And so the snake tells him if he goes and sees the magic wizard will remove his shell, and then he'll be fast. And so he goes off on this adventure to do that.
But as with all things in life, there are always equal and opposite reactions to every action, and then there are consequences for the decisions. And what I find endearing about this, I have a brother who is mentally and physically challenged, and he has been slower than most quote-unquote normal people, and that's, you know, perception. And he learned a long time ago how to be comfortable in his skin. So to me, this beautiful little book is teaching a child how to be comfortable with who they are. Am I correct in that assumption?
Yep, absolutely. That it is, you know, really at the heart of it is about self-acceptance. You know, we all have things about ourselves we don't really like, you know, and it's about that.
And also it could be read as it could be read to a child, or a child could read it with the thought process, hey, I know someone who's challenged. I need to accept him like I want him to accept himself. So then again, you have another life lesson there, that we're all different.
Yeah, it will help the child feel someone else's pain, you know, to see that somebody else can be really miserable in their skin, and maybe you could reach out to them and help them learn to love themselves and accept themselves just the way they are.
I am so glad you're on this show tonight. This is just a marvelous, marvelous show.
Well, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Your newest little book, Little Birdie Grows Up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is your picture book for the younger crowd, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I know your daughter has left for college, and all of my kids have been grown and gone for many years. But when the last one leaves, it hurts just as much as when the first one leaves. So explain this little book. That is, I know it's absolutely marvelous just from the synopsis of it. Tell the audience, because it's a catharsis for the mother bird as well as the baby bird.
Yeah, that is true.
Explain this book.
So, you know, my daughter is, you know, my only child, so I'm very attached to her. And when she left for college, I really went through empty nest syndrome. You know, I was very sad and anxious, and it was just hard. It was just hard for me to let her go. And my girlfriend and I, we were having lunch, and she's like, you know, you should write a book about a little bird leaving the nest. And I sort of let that percolate in the back of my head. And one day I was sitting and I wrote actually a story about a little bird leaving the nest. And when I was rereading it, I thought, you know, I could make this into a poem. And, you know, back when I was younger, I used to like to write poetry. And so I started working it into a poem. And when I got all done, I thought, you know, this would make a good little picture book. And so I started working with an illustrator to make this book come to life. And it really portrays, you know, if you're the mother reading the book, that sense of, you know, having a little baby and watching them, you know, really wanting to grow up and, you know, fly. This little birdie wants to fly just like our children want to grow up and be somebody. And it's a great experience to help a child grow up and be somebody. But at that point where they're ready to actually go off, you're happy to see them go off and be successful, for your own self, there's a bit of grief, you know. And so it sort of captures that in the story. At the same time, it's just a cute little birdie who wants to fly, and you follow his little journey, and, you know, you're celebrating with him when he finally is able to fly. So you're right, it has kind of that parallel message in there.
And you brought up an interesting statement, and when you said that when your daughter left, that you suffered a loss and grief, and I agree with you. when because as parents, especially as mothers, we nurture these children not just from the day they come into the world, but for 9 months before that. We are their total source of nourishment and protection and all of the stuff that goes on with that. And then once they're born, we feed them and sit up with them all night, and as they grow up, fix their scraped knees and stay up all night waiting for them to come in from dates or wherever they are and get them through the first boyfriend, the first girlfriend, the first breakup with their best friend, and then all of a sudden they're gone.
Yeah.
And a lot of mothers don't have something to fall back on, so that sense of grief stays with them. It's like faith death or something. Do you agree with that statement?
I do. Yeah, I think, you know, before I had children and all, I sort of heard the empty nest syndrome and never really understood what they were talking about, because when I was a child and I left, I never thought about how my parents felt. You know, I mean, I guess that's just human nature. You know, you can't imagine that it bothers your parents because you're ready to go, you know? And so I didn't know until really, I mean, honestly, when I had her, I had that even beginning inkling, like, I love her so much, and one day she's going to grow up and leave me, you know? And, you know, that was kind of just a really quick little thought early on. But, you know, as she grew, there were times like, you know, I'd hear her little footsteps coming down the hallway, and I would think, you know, one day I'm not going to hear that, and she's going to be gone. And just different things, you know, throughout her life. And because of that, I cherished every moment that we had. And I remember telling myself often, you know, you get one shot at raising her, so do it right, you know. And I tried to make sure that I took the time and I was present for her growing up. So, yes, when she left, she was such a big part of my life. It was like I didn't know what to do with myself, you know. And I'm married and I have a husband, and so you wouldn't, I don't know, think that it would be that big of a loss, but it is. That relationship is very meaningful, and the loss is hard. But what's been beautiful for us with my daughter and I is our relationship has changed and become actually something better, you know. And
it's no longer a mother-daughter. It's more of friendship.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. And, you know, and I respect her, and I'm very proud of her and everything she's become and is becoming. And, you know, it's a very good thing, the process. But going through it, I just didn't see how it was going to get better. You know, I just felt the loss. So that was big for me.
Do you think that women who, for lack of a better word, try to hold on to their children and hold them back as these children are trying to grow up and find their own way, do you think they do them a disservice when they don't allow their children to become adults and independent and, I used to say, cutting the apron strings and starting out on their own? It's not healthy for the mother or the child, correct?
Absolutely correct, because, you know, that is life, is for you to grow up and leave the nest and become your own person and start your own family. I mean, that is what's supposed to happen. So when a mom really holds that child back, or that child feels, like, guilty about leaving, or, you know, I don't know, there's some sort of thing where they don't feel like they could or they should leave, then you've really retarded their growth as an adult, and that's really not healthy.
Well, and that child cannot be a three-dimensional person, because they're still two-dimensional. They're still an extension of that parent. And,
right.
And someday that parent will be gone and that child will not only suffer the loss of the parent, but they will suffer the loss of that thing that they couldn't grow into, because those years are already gone. You can't go back and do have a redo.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, because they didn't learn to be independent, you know.
Correct.
And yeah, so it really does. You're right. It's a not just a loss of your parent, but a loss of the ability to ever have been independent, and now you have to face that, but you're crippled, you know, to do it so much later in life.
And you can never go back and pick up those lost years and grow into that three-dimensional person. All you can do is start where you are, and there's still going to be a piece missing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'm telling you, this has been I am enjoying this. I hate for this hour to end, but sadly, it's going too shortly. So before it does, let's talk about where you personally can be found, your website, where people can find you, because I know after the show people are going to be running to you saying, okay, I need books, I want signed books. Where can you be found?
Okay, so I have a website / blog. I try to blog definitely weekly, where I'm writing the article. The rest of the week is sometimes I'm sharing interviews of other children's authors and things. And so my blog is, do you want me to give the whole address?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so it's www.WandaLustman, and I'll spell that out, WandaLustman, and then it's at .wordpress.com.
Now, I also, and would you do me a very big favor and send your children authors over to me so I can get them on the show as well, because our children need books. They need to read. They need to be read to. And I want people to know that we have wonderful children's authors out there. So if you would pass me along and abuse me and tell them to contact me so I can get them on the show.
I would absolutely love to do that.
Thank you. And you can also put this show on your blog if you want to as well.
Oh, I definitely will. I definitely will. And on my blog, I have some tabs where it's some resources for parents, resources for teachers. It's a tab for kids where they can find coloring pages of like Tad and characters in that book. And then there's a place where you can contact me through that, and it'll email me. But I could also just give you my email if you want me to do that.
Go ahead.
And so that is, all of a sudden I've forgotten. It's Wanda, LU64@gmail.com. And so I, you know, you can contact me through my website, or if you just wanted to email me directly, either way, that would be fine to get a hold of me to get signed copies of the book.
And you're also on Facebook.
I am on Facebook. That is facebook.com/WLustman.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, you have to get this author's books. If you have children, you have to get her books, because her books are so fantastic. Not only are they entertaining and teach the child a love of reading, but they teach lessons even for the little ones. Even the little bitties can learn lessons from her books. So I encourage you all, go on Amazon, order her books, or contact her, and she'll sign books for you.
Mm-hmm.
And start your children off right by reading to them. Let them check out books at the library. Buy them books. Encourage them to read. Encourage them to be creative. Am I right, Wanda?
Yes, yes. That's so important.
Now, in about 2 minutes, I need for you to, if you will, to encourage the dreamers out there. What would you say to a dreamer? to make their dream real.
I would say, you know, hold on to that dream and pursue it. Every chance, every opportunity you have, pursue that dream. And even if it feels like a big dream and it's far away, there are steps you can take to start yourself towards that path. And I would encourage you to take that first step towards that. And then after you do that first step, you'll see the next step and the next one. And talk to other dreamers and other people who are doing what you dream about, so that you can be inspired and learn from their mistakes, of course, and learn the path that will help you best to reach your dream and be the best person that you can be.
And we need dreamers. Oh,
mm-hmm.
We need them so bad. And
yes, we do.
As soon as we get off of this show, I'm going to go to my desk and pick a date. If it's okay with you, then we'll set the show for you to come back, and we'll do just a show on grief from babies on up to the elderly, because grief strikes us all, and anyone that says they've never grieved lies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to grieve, ladies and gentlemen. It's okay to hurt. It's okay to go through the steps. What it's not okay to do is to stay stuck and not move forward. So we'll get into all of that. And Wanda, I so appreciate you coming on tonight. My heart is just filled with love and appreciation and gratefulness, because we got past the little I'm not sure thing, and you came on, and it's off the chain, but it's a good off the chain.
You betcha, it is. It's awesome.
And I want to have you as a regular on the show, so I'll be, even after the grief show, I want you to come back often and talk about your books and what's coming out, and let's get these kids reading and get some more of your children's authors on my show, so that we can open up a whole new avenue for these kids to read, because every child should be able to read. Every child should have a book.
Yes, I agree, absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are getting towards the end of our show, and my guest tonight has been a children's author, Wanda Luthman. She is an amazing, amazing author. She's an amazing woman. She has very fastly become one of my favorite people, who I absolutely adore on many levels. So tomorrow night, I will have a return guest, a radio host, Floyd Potts, and if y'all listened to the show I had with him the other week, we totally went off the chain, talked about everything under the shining sun, and tomorrow night at 9 o'clock, he will be on my show. At 8 o'clock, I will be on Blog Talk Radio on another show. I will be a guest on Paige Roberts' show. So join me. Join me at the 8 o'clock hour. I will post the link. I will be having a roundtable discussion with a bunch of other ladies. I have no idea what we're going to be talking about. It should be interesting. At the 9 o'clock hour here on Off the Chain, Floyd Potts will be back on, and I have some notes, but who knows where he and I will go, because with us, every show is interesting. We talk about everything under the shining sun, and we have discourse. We may agree to disagree, but we have civil discourse. If we have debates, they're civil. If we agree to disagree, that's okay. And the purpose of having him as a constant guest is to teach people how to have discourse, how to have debate about the things that have always been taboo: politics, religion, sexual orientation, crisis in the world. We're going to teach y'all how you can talk about those things and still be friends at the end of the hour. So, ladies and gentlemen, again, Wanda, I am so grateful. Thank you, my friend, so, so much for coming on. Ladies and gentlemen, you're so welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, my listening audience, thank you for being my listening audience and for being supportive and for getting the word out. We're now over 5,000 listeners, so join me tomorrow night at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time with my guest Floyd Potts. On Monday night, I will have author Rick Powell at 8 o'clock. That will be the last show of Thanksgiving break. So until tomorrow night at 9 o'clock, this is Off the Chain, and we are out of here.
Bye.
Hold on. Wanda, okay. Hold on just a minute. We're going into archives. The show is not live anymore, but anything we say will show up in archives. So I will get everything posted probably in the morning, and then I will put it up and tag you. And please put it on your page, put it everywhere, and invite these other authors to get in contact with me. And I'll set our show for the grief show, and it will be an amazing show.
Awesome. That's exciting. I'm looking forward to that. And, yes, I definitely have some children's authors that I can put you in touch with or put them in touch with you. It'd be good.
Wonderful. Well, since I've burnt your ears off and picked your brain to death, I will say adieu until we meet again. And, again, okay. Thank you, my friend, so, so much. I so enjoyed this hour.
Oh, thank you, Yvonne. You just made this so easy and wonderful, and I am full of gratitude and love for you. This has just been wonderful. So thank you so much.
You're welcome, darling, and I'll be talking to you in a little while.
All righty.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.